I wanted to f*** these chicks when they opened up for Ted Nugent at the Blue Bird Theater in Denver of 1986.
That's ridiculously specific, and I don't even think I'm going to be able to guess this one.
You are listening to The Obscure Gentleman, a sometimes bi-weekly podcast dedicated to pop culture and filtering it through the eyes and ears of the internet. I'm your host, Aaron A. Alvarez. And who are you?
I'm Alex Mitchell.
The man with the satchel. That doesn't rhyme, but...
No, I'm thinking about a rhyme and I can't think of one.
Nor do you own a satchel.
No.
Let's also make that clear. So it's a title in name only.
Yeah. That I will not adopt from this point on.
So we got a Patreon. Patreon.com/obscuregentleman. Feel free to donate or patron us. Support the show and the comic. Also, as for the podcast itself, please hit subscribe, like it, and share it.
Hit the heart.
Hit the heart. That's important. And write a review. We like those.
Yeah.
We have like about 5, but we would like more. We have a show for you, and Antonio Banderas will be the one to set things off. So, take it away, Antonio.
Back together again, eh? Let's play.
Gang bang!
It was a firefight!
But I don't want to be a pirate!
What is the charge? Eating a meal? A succulent Chinese meal?
How can you snap?
This is a big one. Hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you.
You don't know what hard times are, Daddy.
Kiss my sweaty balls, you fat.
Oh, look. Rocks.
Game over.
You lose. Good day, sir.
No. No.
All right. So, I'm under the weather. It's very clear. And also...
You know, what does that even mean when you think that term?
You're under... clouds, like cartoon rain clouds. I don't know.
That sounds like a euphemism for being sad, though.
It probably has its meanings back in the days of Ben Franklin. It probably means something.
Okay,
you never know. But so not only is that, but this is also technically the first week of our new format. It's not really that big of a format change. It's just We are doing 2 this week. Wednesday is it's a special episode, though. Wednesday is going to be our Doctor Who finale episode. But after that, it's going to go straight to... We're going back to 1 a week. And we're sort of merging the formats now. So we're going to have Mondays and Wednesdays sort of combined. So we're really going to be... We're dropping the talk back from the internet in terms of news. Every now and then, if something's like really crazy, we'll bring that in. Just for a breath of fresh air, we're combining both days into one now, and every now and then we will have a Wednesday episode for you, dedicated to something special. Like this Wednesday will be the Doctor Who finale. So let's just jump into this. So 2 things happened recently, and that was the Captain America Civil War trailer was launched.
Mm-hmm.
And more recently, the Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice trailer was also launched.
It's well, like the second big trailer for that.
Yeah, the story trailer.
Yeah.
There's usually your basic trailer, which...
It shows you cool things that happen.
It gets you hyped.
Yeah.
Second trailer is like, we're going to show you more of the story.
Yeah. So, let me just say right off the bat, both of these trailers were very cool and make me really interested in seeing the movies.
Yeah, cool. Cool's a good word to
use. Yeah, so, they're really cool, though.
Starting with Captain America Civil War.
I think they fit the tone. Because obviously these 2 movies are going to get compared because they're about your respective, you know, good guy versus your respective kind of like, you know,
it's hero versus heroes.
And a lot of people like to compare these 2 guys also.
Who at the end they'll probably come together against some threat.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
I think it's more obvious with
Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
I think with Captain America Civil War, there could... I mean, obviously, we know the Avengers...
But they're not... If there is, they're not revealing it yet.
Yeah. But at least with that, I feel like it's more politically charged. There's more...
Yeah.
...stuff going down. Cap's whole reason to you know, fight Iron Man makes sense. Like, I get it. Well, like, with Bucky and all that.
It's very clear that there's this Super Restriction Act thing going on.
Yeah.
Sides are being chosen.
Battle lines are being drawn, one might say.
Yes. And you get a sense of who's on whose side.
Yeah.
With Cap, it seems to be Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, who else? Oh, Falcon.
Yeah, so basically...
And Bucky, who is apparently, like, rehabilitated.
Yeah, so basically it's your Avengers 2 team at the end of the movie.
Yeah, aside from Vision, who is apparently going to be on Tony's team.
Okay.
From what I'm finding out.
And which I guess makes sense, because we do want to feel like the sides are actually kind of splitting here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's this whole thing of, because of what happened in Age of Ultron, heroes need to be accountable, and so they need to register and be essentially puppets of the government.
Yeah.
Well, not puppets, but...
agents.
Of the government.
Yeah.
Cap is not cool with that. He's his own man. He doesn't feel that him doing good should be limited to what the government says. And as we know, you can't really trust the government in these movies, because they're always either infiltrated by Hydra, or they're just...
doing shit on their own.
Yeah, they're just up to no good.
That's messed up.
So yeah, we get that. We get a lot. That's essentially most of the trailers. But we also get an introduction to a new character, Black Panther.
Yeah,
who's seen in the trailer. And
I'm very happy that people aren't saying, "Ooh, it's Batman!" Like, and
yeah,
like they made it look interesting enough and distinct where it's like, okay, I like this.
An interesting thing you bring that up. What's interesting about it though is, you notice the trailer's mostly shot in, like, the daytime.
Yeah.
Which is, I kind of find interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, Snyder and
well, yeah, Marvel... yeah, comparisons. Yeah. Yeah.
They have their own takes on how
yeah, they're going to do things. Marvel is very much a daytime sort of thing.
Where yeah.
A lot of the action takes place in the day where you can really see everything.
Well, okay, let me think about it. Iron Man's a big fight happened at night, and Iron Man 2 also.
The Iron Man movies, yeah. But,
yeah. Like, but for the most part...
the Avengers,
yeah.
Daytime.
Captain America, it was daytime.
Yeah, all that stuff, like...
yeah.
And we're inside bases and stuff, but... so, with Black Panther, yeah, you don't see him obscured in the shadows or anything. You straight up see him.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a straight up shot of him... waist up, and he looks awesome.
Yeah, he looks cool.
The eyes are even like silvered out, so you can even see. So I mean, that's pretty great. We get shots of him running. We get shots of essentially the whole team running. But the money shot that people are going wild for is the 2-on-1.
Yeah.
So
and I'm gonna be honest. I love things like that where it's like you can clearly see like shit's going down.
Yeah.
It's Captain America and Bucky beating the shit, well, attempting to beat the shit out of Iron Man.
Yeah. Well, they are beating, like...
but it seems like he's still holding his ground.
Yeah, he's trying to, like,
yeah.
shoot them with his repulsor rays, but...
it's not working.
They just... and then they're, like, tossing the shields back and
forth. Oh, my God. Yeah, that shit's... that's amazing.
Like, it's great seeing them fight, and not just because it's Iron Man, just seeing them, like, their teamwork.
Well, because, like, I thought the best parts of Captain America 2 action-wise were all the fight scenes between them.
Yeah.
So I feel like to get that kind of, like, tag team action going on, it's really cool.
The shield toss is just... that's my favorite part of that whole
yeah.
small... whatever we saw, but... so we get that. There's no real Ant-Man shown in the trailer, but he is in the film.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of characters that are going to be in this
there
movie.
Is a lot of characters. Oh, we also get Thunderbolt Ross's return.
Oh, nice.
We last saw him in Hulk.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Many people have forgotten that movie.
Okay, well, that was the thing, too, because I was wondering, like, how much of that movie still do they want to keep canon?
Oh, no, that movie's canon.
Okay.
It's
just that Edward Norton is not the Hulk anymore.
Yeah, but the movie's completely canon.
Okay.
So we see Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah.
And he seems to be the main antagonist, maybe. See, the thing is, they're keeping a lot of things secret, and they're just setting up that it's just Stark versus Steve.
Yeah.
That's sort of what they're setting up. But, you know, based on casting, you know that, like, all these other characters are involved, and what's his name? Who plays Watson, the actor?
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he also plays Bill.
Martin Freeman.
Yeah. He has a large role, which hasn't been revealed yet. There's talk of Zemo.
Okay.
So we don't really know essentially what's really happening here. But it looked exciting. It doesn't give away too much. It just clues you in, like, okay, this is where everything goes down. This is where relationships are broken. Yeah. Where friendships are
brother
destroyed.
Against brother.
Yes. yeah, friendships are destroyed. Maybe new alliances are forged.
Yeah.
Who knows? But
I think, unfortunately, for me, there's always that cynical part of me that says, I really hope it doesn't just end with all of them being friends again. And I don't think they're going to do that,
My guess is that it's going to end with them not being friends.
Okay.
And they will become friends again in...
like Infinity Wars.
Yeah, Infinity Wars. That's my guess, is that this is going to be the breaking, and then we're going to have to wait years, and then finally when Infinity Wars hits,
we can mend the fences a bit here.
And hopefully that will be finally when we hear Cap say Avengers Assemble.
Yeah.
Which would be one of the greatest things ever. Because
it does kind of bother me. I'm not going to lie. Because I remember when I first was on 4chan after I saw that movie. And they said, you know, that feel when they never said Avengers Assemble. I was like, holy shit, they never did.
No.
And then at the end, I was like, really? Like,
well, it's kind of like I want an X-Men movie to meet my X-Men. Still never happened.
I don't think that's ever going to happen, though.
I just want it. But we'll see. But, yeah, the trailer looked great. I have no real complaints. And, of course, they're not going to give away the big surprise. Well, it's an open surprise, this whole Spider-Man thing.
Yeah, and I think that's what everyone wants to see. Yeah. Everyone was saying, this was cool, but where's Spider-Man? That's the big...
Had there been no Spider-Man, I'm guessing they wouldn't have really shown Black Panther all that much. That would have been a surprise.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're not going to give that away in the trailer. That's going to be a special moment.
And I guarantee it's going to be like a very small scene that has no real consequence. Yeah, or maybe it's not.
That's why it's like we don't know. But that's what a lot of people are like. Okay, when are we going to see Spider-Man now? So
I think that just shows you how popular Spider-Man is.
Spider-Man is,
and this also proved to me that there are people who do attempt to keep up with the whole the whole film franchise aspect of this, because it's like I know we said earlier that there were people who weren't aware that these things aren't connected, and now I guess I'm assuming more people are more informed now.
Yeah, and let's be honest here, Spider-Man is really Marvel's main hero.
Yeah,
and I don't mean that by he's the one who the Marvel universe centers around. I mean in terms of pop culture, the pop cultural landscape, Spider-Man is really Marvel's Superman. And you can easily show that by the fact that back in the day, that was the big crossover, was Spider-Man and Superman. So, I mean, Spider-Man's always been popular. There's never been a time when it's his popularity dipped or anything. He's always been on top of the pop cultural zeitgeist. I mean, Iron Man, yeah, he's very popular now. But, I don't know. I don't think he will ever surpass Spider-Man in terms of popularity. If the movie-going audience is cool with accepting, two reboots already...
It's
the nature of the beast. I mean, but it looks cool. Pretty excited for it. We'll have to just wait next year when it comes out. Yeah, a lot of waiting. I mean, we got Star Wars coming up soon, so
yeah, that's true.
To hold us over. And so then next we move on to the other trailer.
Yeah,
Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice.
This has been interesting for you.
It's a roller coaster for me.
Yeah, because initially, I think you weren't hype. Okay, here's the thing. I think when the first image was released of that logo, it's like, oh shit, okay, it's finally happening.
And then it's like, wait a minute.
Now we got to consider, what does this mean for...
But I was like, wait a minute, Batman V. Why is Batman's name first? I thought this was a Superman sequel.
Yeah, it is, but it isn't. Then, so it's like...
Then it was said, okay, this is definitely not a Superman sequel.
Yeah.
But we'll get one down the road. Now, apparently that's on hiatus.
You were kind of hype about that leaked footage of the rain fight scene.
Yes, that did look pretty cool. And then after that, when we got our first trailer...
The teaser,
I was just like, why? Why are you making Superman look like the bad guy? And they did.
Yeah.
They made him look like the bad guy, and then, you know...
The first trailer came out. Proper trailer.
Yeah. And I was a little... I was like, it looks okay.
But you're still kind of iffy on Superman looking really, mean and angry.
And then the small teaser came out, which was a scene.
Yeah, which was very recently. This is like a
this was like 2 days before the official second third trailer came out, and that it's a dream sequence. It's been confirmed as a dream sequence, okay. But it makes Superman look evil.
Yeah,
like really evil, and Batman look like he's.
You know, in great peril,
and he's.
But if it's a dream sequence, I can forgive it because it's kinda,
it's a
perspective thing.
It's kind of like when Man of Steel came out and the trailer had the scene with the skulls. People were like, should Man have been buried under skulls? That turns out it's a dream sequence.
Yeah,
why is he wearing a black uniform? So then this trailer came out, the story trailer.
Yeah,
the funny story trailer, and it wowed me. I mean, it finally showed them. As equals, and it was less like Superman's evil, Batman's
good, yeah.
And doesn't trust him.
Yeah.
I mean, you get some of that. You do get some of that.
Of course, they're not going to trust each other. That's the whole purpose of this film.
But you get the sort of, again, the bits of the story where it's like, oh, but then they have to team up.
Yeah.
So before we say that, though, so we get a proper look at Lex Luthor, to put it clearly.
I didn't know this, by the way.
A lot of people don't know this for me, but this...
I don't look up articles and stuff.
This was like... That's why it's like... I wish they would have done a better job at like showing this article like on social media, but I guess they didn't. It was like a faux interview that was done by them. And it was Alexander Luthor Jr., Lex Luthor Jr. That's who... Jesse Eisenberg is playing. He's not playing Lex Luthor.
Like proper Lex.
He's playing his son. And in the article, they even reference the son. I mean the father.
Okay. See, I didn't know that, and that because when I first saw this trailer, I was like, That seems to be the general reaction is that they're not really big on his take on Luthor.
If that was normal Lex, to me that would be a big problem.
No, but when you told me that was Luthor Jr., I was like, oh, okay, that asshole from Infinite Crisis.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, I'm fine with that. I'm totally cool with it now. He can do whatever he wants with it, and it's fine.
And so because of that, to me, it takes off a little bit of the annoying aspect. Because he sounds annoying. He acts kind of...
He's a kid.
Yeah, he acts like a douchebag.
He's probably spoiled as shit, too.
Yeah,
so.
he acts like a douchebag.
And to me, this makes me excited because that means we'll probably get, like, Lex Sr.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Unless he's not, like, dead or something.
Please don't say that.
So we get him. We get... clear shots of him and him talking and bantering between Clark and Bruce because this is their first meetup, and you get the whole like Bruce is talking shit about Superman. Superman's talking shit about Batman.
You know what? It does oddly remind me of the cartoon where they first meet up.
Yeah.
And it was cool because we got that moment where Clark talks about how, you know, most of the people don't see it like that. They trust Superman. They appreciate. Yeah. And I thought that was cool because I know. Because I'm a Batman fan, but I also like Superman, and I don't like this weird notion that... I don't like that weird narrative that I thought they've been trying to give off, which is Superman.
Well, and same with me. Like, I'm a...
Yeah,
I'm
you're a huge Superman
fan. I'm a Superman fan, and I like Batman. And again, I don't like the sort of thing they're trying to give off. We get this little banter between them, and it's Bruce... It's his ideology versus Clark's ideology, and... there's even a Joker reference. We don't like... We have a problem with people running around clown suits. But then we, you know, we get more stuff, and then it's revealed what the main threat of this movie was.
Yeah.
Which... What, okay.
That was a rumor that I didn't know...
Yeah.
I didn't know if I'd be cool with it, to be
and
honest.
While I have no problem with that, I'm... And we'll say it in a bit. I'm very surprised they revealed it this soon. But I have a feeling they did that because of how well received the Civil War trailer was. That they decided we need to
up the ante a bit.
Yeah, and I mean,
and I'll be honest, I think this will be. I think both these movies are going to make a shit ton of money.
Oh, they are.
Yeah,
but
well, I'm excited either way.
The bad guy, the official bad guy in this movie it's weird.
Well,
it's a hybrid of bad guy. So it's Zod apparently turned into Doomsday.
Yeah, I the way I took it was like his like DNA at least,
or his body. I don't know.
Or his I don't know for sure.
In his body, and he's clearly mutated into Doomsday.
Yeah.
So, and plus he's shooting out like Kryptonian
I beams.
So
I was surprised when I saw it. I was, like, legit shocked when I saw that.
You know, I was like, what the f-? I was like, that is weird.
Yeah. A lot of people are saying it looks kind of weird and goofy. I don't really care, to be honest.
It does. It reminds me of a Lord of the Rings cave troll. being honest, it could look better. You see some of the Rocky features. I'm hoping, like, it's like a case where sometimes they've done this where he slowly mutates more and eventually looks like that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's the case, but, I mean, it's... If it's a fusion of the two characters, then whatever.
Yeah.
But
I think the other big thing...
Okay, yeah.
...is...
We got it in the last trailer, we got a bit of it, but this time we actually got, like...
A full shot.
Yeah, Wonder Woman.
Yeah. And so the Trinity is finally on film.
Before that happens, we get this, like, small comedic thing, which, like... It was like, oh my god, we're... It feels nice. It was like, seeing a bit of comedy from the heroes in a trailer for these movies felt like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. And I know that's always been the criticism of Snyder's take on this, is that it's been this very dark, kind of unfun, I'll just be honest, take on it.
But Batman turns to Superman and says, is she with you? and then he says, no, I thought she was with you. And you finally get to hear Ben Affleck, like, in
normal voice.
His normal Batman voice, and he looks cool. Like,
yeah.
It is weird how much this looks like Batman. And I know it's strange to say that, but
when I saw, like, Ben Affleck walking, you know, for the press conference or whatever, it was like a gala or something. I'm like, that looks like Bruce Wayne to me.
But then seeing him in the, like, this is the first time on screen where I think we've gotten, like, the best Batman outfit.
Yeah. Like, I know that's going to piss off a lot of people who like power armor and, like, you know, like, like, tactical gear and shit like that.
It looks cool. Like seriously, it looks like it jumped off the page. Like,
no, seeing him, like, climb, and then this was in the last trailer also. Yeah. But you see the lightning shot, and, you know, he's doing the whole, like, Dark Knight Returns.
But, like, with this, we get a lot of, like, head movement and, like, seeing him talk. And,
yeah.
Like, and seeing Batman, it feels like we're getting Batman on screen, like, for reals now.
Yeah, because we've had Superman on screen for a while, and I don't think it's ever been contended that there's never been a good portrayal of Superman.
This just finally feels like it's almost like Warner saying, you know what?
Fuck it.
Let
the chips fall where they may. We want to see Batman.
We're showing you Batman. We're not going to be like, well, this is a more grounded, realistic Batman. It's like, no, this guy looks like the kind of guy who would fight Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, and as campy and as weird as Jared Leto's take on the Joker is, I do feel like it's going to feel like a real rivalry between, like, a Batman character and a Joker character. Whereas, like, with, like, Dark Knight, obviously they couldn't continue that because of Ledger's passing.
My interesting thing is, like, it's nice that Batman's going away from the grounded thing.
Yeah.
Superman's costume looks a lot better than the last one. I don't know what they did, but the patterning on the sides that leads to the belt area, it looks a lot more divided. So the
costume, so you're breaking up colors. And
yeah, stuff. It looks a lot less like onesie. So, I mean, that's great. Wonder Woman looks fantastic.
I think that's been the costume I've had, like, absolutely no issues with.
It looks awesome. Like, yeah. It looks like a cool costume. Now,
and I think she looks good as Wonder Woman. I know a lot of people were concerned initially that she wouldn't look the part. I think it looks fine.
And so I think here's the main takeaway that I have from this, though, is with Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice is, for me, the trailer that we saw was, it makes me want to see it because it looks cool. It's like, I'm more interested in the coolness and the concept of these superheroes, like, getting together for the first time.
Like, ever, by the way.
Yeah, and it's like, it's a lot of style points where it's like, wow, this is finally happening. Whereas Civil War, I'm more interested.
You're invested in that universe,
and invested in the story.
Yeah,
like, even though it looks great and everything, to me the story is very important, and that's what I care more about. Whereas with this Batman v Superman movie, I'm a little more. I don't really care about the story. I feel like,
because, you know what, it's and that's the thing too, is I a lot of people are saying that you know, they blew their load early with this trailer because they're showing you a lot.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like...
But I kind of feel like it's one of those things where it's like, Look at the look at the subtitle of that movie. Yeah. You know what's gonna happen.
I'm not as invested in the story. I'm more like, I want to see these superheroes like team up for the first time.
You want to get to point B now, essentially. You don't want to really start with point A.
Yeah, like to me, I think if it's not good story wise, it's gonna be a very pretty movie.
Yeah,
it's gonna look very.
I've never had an issue with the way Snyder's films have looked. Yeah. I've always thought they looked interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, I would say my takeaway is those are the two differences between these. Is where with Civil War, I'm more excited for just to see where the story goes. Whereas Batman v Superman, I'm just excited to be like, oh man, the world's finest are finally together.
The Trinity is together. So. Yeah, no less.
So we'll see what that happens because that also comes out next year. So. 2016 is going to be a hell of a year for superhero films.
Just in movies in general, I think.
I mean, yeah, we're getting Deadpool, we're getting a new X-Men film.
Yeah.
We're getting a Hank Williams movie.
That's a real superhero.
That's a country superhero. Are you excited?
Yeah, I have no reason not to be.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like I am more excited for Batman v Superman just because it's like new. Like, there's so much of this Batman that I want to see, and Wonder Woman too.
Yeah.
Whereas like with Marvel, here's the thing. I know I'm gonna see that, and I know I'm gonna have a good time.
Yeah.
So it's like, cool. You know,
I'm equally excited for both.
Yeah. But it's like my hype is a bit higher for the other one. Whereas with the other one, I'm more interested, like you said, the story. I want to see how we get. What, you know,
that shot of them standing together was like, oh my, this is really happening.
Yeah.
It's almost like when I first saw the first Avengers trailer.
Yeah, again, it's that concept where it's like we need to really see
this
it.
This is, you know, happening. This is real.
Like, if I were to say, like difference between, like, Avengers 2, was like, I have interest in it, but it's like, I already saw the big team up for the first time. Yeah. It's not going to be as exciting.
It is that sense of something new.
Yeah.
But I think both will be entertaining. I think they're both going to make lots of money.
And you know what? This is just good for fans of comics in general, yeah, I think.
I mean,
you're just going to have a good time.
But again,
time.
Of course, it's going to...
Yeah, there's going to be fanboy wars and all that.
It's like, I think...
And again...
Like what you want to like.
You can like both. You don't... Yeah. That's the weirdest thing I've never understood.
I think that's a talk for another time, the whole idea of that. Yeah,
this applies to so much, though. Yeah. Star Trek and Star Wars.
So you bringing back the subject we've been doing lately because it's just entertaining as hell for us. Unsung heroes.
Unsung heroes of Star Wars.
So you have a few for me.
I do. I want to keep this a bit musically.
All right.
You know, because I did. I talked about Star Wars music recently. I said one. I keep
and,
it to.
And that'll be appearing soon on the 12 for a Penny podcast.
Yes. Or it's already out, I don't know. Schedules are weird.
Alright.
So, here we go. First off, we got Figurin Dan and the Model Nodes.
Okay.
Now, if you don't know who they are, they're in one scene in Star Wars, the original Star Wars. So, Figurin Dan...
Wait, is that the Cantina Band?
They are the Cantina
Band. Oh, that's the actual band?
Yes. Figurin Dan and the Model Nodes... were an all-Bith music band specializing in the fields of jizz and jazz.
I know about that, yeah. They play jizz.
And that's where I get censored. The band leader and organizer was an overbearing, compulsive Bith named Fiery Figurin Dan. The Model Nodes were members of the Intergalactic Federation of Musicians and maintained a reputable standing within the trade guild. The band's matching stage costumes were somber in tone, and reflected the moody aesthetics attributed to their preferred style of music.
That's so moody.
Although the Model Nodes enjoyed success in the intergalactic circuit, they never rose to great prominence beyond the Outer Rim territory worlds, owed largely in part to the fact that they incorporated no vocalists into their act. The membership roster of the band alternated over the years, adding and subtracting members whenever the situation called for it. They persistently maintained at least 5 permanent members at any one time, and sometimes as many as 7. The model nodes members included Doik Nats, Figurin Dan,
okay,
Ichabel Gaunt, Liren Karn, Nalan Chiel, Sunil Aidy, Tech Moore, and Ted and Dinar. And then there's a bunch of
these
like
these are the greatest names ever.
Yeah, I'm literally just adding like phonics together and just making names. During the height of the Clone Wars, the band was part of Jasad Revok's Galactic Review. Shortly before the Battle of Yavin, Figuren Dan and the Mono Notes had entered into an exclusive contract with the Tatooine crime lord Jabba the Hutt. Or as it's called here, Jabba de Silijik Tiur. He's got a full fucking name.
Oh, wow. Of course he does.
They would routinely play gigs at both Jabba's...
Wait, I thought he was a Hutt.
It's okay. That's his name. The Hutt is like a title, I think.
That's their fan. Oh, whatever.
I have no idea.
That's weird.
They would routinely play gigs at both Jabba's palace and his Mos Eisley townhouse. The model nodes were not content with merely playing the Mos Eisley circuit.
Wait a minute, that's a townhouse?
I suppose.
Oh my god, that's amazing. Okay.
And it wasn't long before they all regretted entering into a contract with the opportunistic Hutt. Recognizing Jabba's penchant for executing underlings that displeased him at a moment's notice, the model nodes began to fear for their lives. It would only be a matter of time before Jabba decided to make a snack of the musicians by tossing one down into the dungeon abode of his pet Rancor. Fortunately for them, a golden opportunity was fresh at hand. One of Jabba's rivals, a whiphead named Lady Valerian, offered the band 3,000 credits to perform at her wedding to the hunter named Dwap.
Okay.
That doesn't sound racist at all. Figuren decided that the fast money would enable them to get off Tatooine and out from under the thumb of Jabba the Hutt. They arrived at the Star Chamber Cafe reception hall inside of the Lucky Despot Hotel and Casino in Mos Eisley. During one of their set breaks, Figuren took the band's retainer and spent the bulk of it at the casino sabacc table. So I guess that's like gambling or something. The other musicians grew gravely concerned. Thanks to Figuren's gambling, their chances of getting off Tatooine alive were quickly dwindling. Jabba learned of the model node's breach of contract and sent several of his bounty hunters down to the casino to disrupt the festivities. As luck would have it, Imperial stormtroopers likewise raided the party, and a massive firefight broke out. During the confusion, the model nodes met a party guest named Muhir, who showed them a quick way out. Wuher put in a good word for them.
Wuher?
Wuher.
Oh, Wuher.
Not a Latina lady. Wuher put in a good word for them with Chowman, a Wookiee who owned a nearby cantina.
Chowman, okay.
Where Wuher tended bar. So I guess that's that guy is the bartender then. No blasters, that guy.
Okay.
So yeah. Chowman hired the model notes to play at a couple of gigs at his bar the following evening. They were performing the day when Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi entered the cantina,
oh,
seeking a pilot to get them to the Alderaan system. They continued to perform at Chalmers on a regular basis. Occasionally, Chalmers' night shift manager, Akmena, would liven the bar's atmosphere by singing along with the model node's rhythms. One evening, Imperial Intelligence suspected that the subversive activity that was taking place in Mos Eisley... As such, they placed a mandatory curfew on the port city, requiring everyone to return to their homes immediately. The model nodes were just finishing up a set at the time the decree was broadcast. They were quite vocal about stopping the show early, but Akmena assuaged their concerns by offering the group one round of free drinks. Shortly after this event, Figuren Dan wagered the band's instruments and equipment on a hand of sabacc. He lost the bet, but the model nodes simply soon convinced him to win their equipment back. He eventually succeeded, and the model nodes agreed to finally leave Tatooine. They went on to play the intergalactic circuit, receiving lukewarm reviews. In 1 year after the Battle of Yavin, the model nodes played at Nim's base on the planet Lok during Nim's anniversary bash. Later the same year, the band gave several holiday concerts during Life Day festivities beneath the branches of the giant trees of life in Coronet, Theed, Kachiro, Wayfar, Dierek, and Dwaba Gwerfell.
Dad, you just made all that up.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it.
What?
And apparently here's a little thing like later on. Figuren Dan II and the new model nodes... Presumably a tribute band often played the group's tunes.
Well, it's good that music lives on in the Star Wars universe, but That's for some jizz slingers, as they're called, I believe.
Wait, yes.
That's weird.
That is weird.
All that for a band that appears in, like, what? How many? It's probably 3 minutes.
I don't even think it's that long. I feel like they're on screen for...
I mean, it's an iconic song.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But, I mean...
It just reminds me of the Lego game.
Yeah.
But... Okay. All right, you got one more?
I do, Freed. Max Rebo, whose real name was Cerulean...
Oh, shit.
Max Rebo, whose real name was Cerulean Fantelli...
Well, I don't like that.
Hey, let me spell that for you, by the way. S-I-I-R-U-U-L-I-A-N.
That's lazy.
Yeah. Was a male Ortolan who was known as a popular musician and head member of the Max Rebo Band. He was a skinny Ortolan, the youngest of five children. The male Ortolan named Cerulean Fantele was born on his species homeworld of Orto. As he was the smallest of five younglings, and apparently that's a term just used for children.
Okay.
His mother feared that he would waste away. As a consequence, Fantele spent his younger years in the pursuit of food. Eventually, he ended up working in a flant house, where he paid for his dinner every night. One day, Fantele was discovered by Evar Orbis, a crowd-pleasing Lataki whaler who was on the lookout for young, talented, yet exploitable entertainers. So... This just already sounds dirty and gross by the time I'm...
No.
Orbis approached Fantele, promising him that he would never need to go hungry again provided that he signed his musical services over. Fantele's constant pursuit of food told him that this was an opportunity not to be missed. Fantele signed himself over to Orbis, and on the recommendation of his new manager, changed his name to Max Rebo. Shortly after the Max Rebo band was formed, Rebo played the red ball organ, and here's a little picture of Max Rebo at a gala.
That's ridiculous.
So it was Max Rebo literally in like a tux. That's so lazy.
Oh god.
At some point during the Clone Wars, Rebo attended a VIP. By the way, apparently it seems like all these characters like
were involved in the Clone Wars
and like the Galactic Civil War too, so that's crazy. At some point during the Clone Wars, Rebo attended a VIP gala held by Bez Drex on Coruscant. He found the reception boring, however, and he spent time off to the side of the crowd with his hands in the pockets of his tuxedo.
Really?
Yeah. In 3 years after the Battle of Yavin, Evar Orbis was killed by Figrin Dan and the Model Nodes because the
band... Oh my god, it ties together.
I didn't know that. Because the band came to Tatooine to take their job at the Mos Eisley Cantina. So holy shit, Figrin Dan's a fucked up asshole then. This was when Cy Snoodles, who's the singer in...
Yes,
the,
yeah.
You actually covered
these
her.
It's all tied together.
Yeah. This is when Cy Snoodles encouraged Rebo to take lead of the musical group. Snoodles, however, discreetly controlled the band herself.
Oh god, please don't say that they ended up a couple or something.
Letting naive Rebo take the credit as frontman. She did this in order to avoid becoming the target of those that the band might and most likely would potentially hang her. Snoodles' plan had terrible repercussions for the band, however, when Rebo signed the entire band over to Jabba the Hutt with a lifelong contract including an unlimited supply of food. The band was confined to performing in Jabba's palace until Jabba died at the hands of Leia Organa and the rebels. After Jabba was killed, he went on tour with Cy since...
Wait, how the fuck... Wasn't he on the barge?
He was on the barge.
And he survived?
After Jabba was killed... He went on tour with Cy since his other band member Droopy left to find his brothers in the desert. After Cy set off on her own, Rebo set out on his own solo career, and after many tours, joined the Rebel Alliance to entertain soldiers. He eventually left the music industry and opened his own chain of restaurants, Max Rebo's Flant House. He became quite rich and eventually settled on Coruscant.
What? he survived the barge.
He did.
I don't know how, and that is weird. This is like Fats Domino.
It's weird because like these are stories that would make sense in like a. In like a New York kind of setting.
Well, this is to like, me. This is like Fats Domino, having like a promising career and then joining like maybe Al Capone and just playing for him forever.
Yeah.
And then Al Capone being in a submarine and then or a boat and it crashes or something, and then he swims to shore and then opens up a bunch of restaurants.
Yeah, pretty much.
How did he I want to know how he survived.
That's the thing that I'm concerned about, because it doesn't actually say how he survived in there. I think I need to read it.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that was this week's Unsung Heroes of Star Wars.
Yeah. And I got two big ones.
You're saving.
Yeah, because I figure the week that...
Star Wars, yeah.
That I will say the real Unsung Heroes of Star Wars.
All right, so moving on... Let's take us into a voyage to the pop culture junkyard. We're opening up those gates and we're heading on in.
I'm scared.
So, today we're going to be talking about a toy that a lot of us wanted as children, usually never got. A toy that could make you the master of people's voices. A toy that could make you... set up people and make their lives change forever because you tricked them.
I know what you're talking about.
A toy that is much about talking.
Oh, yes.
Today, we will be going into Talkboy.
Yeah.
Alright, so, for those who don't know, there was a movie in the 90s.
One of the greatest Christmas movies ever made.
Home Alone 2. And in this movie...
A lot of people think it was in Home Alone 1, by the way.
Yeah, it wasn't, though. In this movie, there's a thing that Kevin Macaulay Culkin used. He used to get in out of situations to steal his dad's credit card, blah, blah, blah. It was called the Talk Boy. Essentially, it was this little recorder thing with a tape. It was a recorder. But you can record and you can alter the pitch to sound like an adult or whatever.
Yeah.
You could, like... It was... There's no way it's a recorder that looking at a camcorder. That's the best way to describe it.
It had a weird little mic thing that jutted out, like
And
if you've seen the movie, that was it. Like
it was something I know I wanted as a child. I know almost all my friends when I was little wanted this.
I did too.
I can't think of a kid who didn't want a Talkboy. The thing is, I never knew anyone who had one.
Yeah, were they like super expensive or something?
Oh, apparently I found out that they ran about like $70.
You know what? Maybe that may have been why they didn't buy me one. Maybe. Because I feel like $70 for like a little handheld thing that I probably would have broken would have been like.
I think it was like Tiger Toys too.
It was. I remember.
It's something that every kid on the playground wanted, but no one ever had. I have a memory of playing with one. And it may have been a cousin's. I'm not sure.
Was it a Talk Girl? Because they also had Talk Girl.
They had Talk Girl, which was pink.
Yeah.
They did that back then.
And flowers were on it, too, I think. Yeah.
But I have a weird memory of playing with one, but I don't really remember. Maybe it was at school. Maybe it was a cousin's. The Talk Boy was one of those things that, like, everyone our age just wanted. It was like, cool, I want to sound like a grown-up.
Hi, this is Peter McAllister, the father.
The real thing about the Talkboy, though, like if you actually play with one or actually like examine one, and people have shown this, is that it's not that great. It's like a very subpar tape recorder. And
does it even work
You know, the quality is just really horrible. Like the mic is bad. The playback sounds like horrendous. But... when you're a kid, it's like...
You don't care.
Yeah. You just wanted that. And then the commercial which we played, it really did make you want to play. Because, like, you want to mess with your siblings. And,
yeah.
And so, I wanted one, he wanted one, but we never got them.
No. never even saw one in real life. I think at Toys R Us I did.
And now we essentially have a Talkboy on our phone.
But it's not as cool. I don't care. No,
it's not shaped like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It's so weird though, because we do have. I don't think it does the pitch change that.
There's probably apps where you can.
Yeah, but the pitch. I don't want to download an app.
They need to make a Talk Boy app. Why don't they do that?
There's probably one on there.
Your phone's not the shape of a Talk Boy. So yes. That's the same. So the commercial though is a big part of what also made it really popular. The movie made it popular, but then there's this commercial that ran on every like channel whenever like it was like kids programming.
It was on Cartoon Network again.
Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, yeah. Kids WB, Fox Kids. Whenever there was kids programming, this commercial would air, and it as we played it, it's this little boy and his bigger sister, and he's just fucking with her the whole time. He's messing with her, and he's like, he's being mischievous. And this commercial really made guitarists want this. Like,
have you noticed? And maybe this is a topic for another time, but toys in the 90s, they made you want to be mischievous little shits.
Yeah, I know, they did.
But they wanted you to, like creepy crawlers, like they wanted you to make fake bugs.
Or gack gross at your sister.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Weird. The 90s were cool like that.
Yeah.
We'll get into that later, though.
So, jumping right in, what do people think of Talk Boy? Okay, so starting off. Shorty Dog 27 says, so basically it's a fucking tape recorder.
Well, yeah, but yeah. I mean,
when you're little, you don't think that, though. You don't,
I mean, even because like I saw tape recorders that were essentially the same thing, but I'm like, but it doesn't have that.
Here's what's funny though. When I was like, I must have been 10. My stepfather brought home a tape recorder that he had to use at meetings and stuff.
Yeah,
and he said he didn't need it anymore. So my sister and I, we were playing with that shit for hours.
Yeah,
like hearing your voice, playing it back and shit. It was like, I don't know why it was fun, but it was. Like nowadays, it's like I can do that whenever I want on my phone. But it's like, why did I do that?
I think it's the imagination. I mean,
we're recording our voices right now. Yeah. But it's
not as fun. If this looked like a Talk Boy, this podcast would be 10 times more fun.
So Is the Vog says, so the goal of this product is to be a little cock blocker.
Yeah.
And then the commercial, yeah, the sister's on a date with her boyfriend, and then they're like really close, and then he holds out the Talk Boy and like alters his voice and says, hey kids, we're home early. Yeah, and then they separate and they're not close to each other. So Jez the G says, Talk Boy prevents teen pregnancy.
It's truly the birth control for all.
They need to teach in schools.
Yeah. Like, if you don't have condoms, use the Talk Boy.
So these three comments are very related to each other because everyone kept pointing this out. So Cagney says, what the fuck is that kid wearing a tie? And yeah, Roscoe says, why the hell is her boyfriend wearing a tie? This is freaking me out, man. Mario says, why would you wear a tie to visit the girl you're when your parents aren't even at home?
That's a good question.
Well, it's the 90s. That's my... I
think in the 90s, I feel everyone was uninformed about what to do in life, and they just did whatever they saw on TV.
She's dressed normal, and he's dressed like with a tie.
Is it like they just came back from a date or something?
No.
That's weird.
They're just sitting watching TV really close to each other.
Okay, then that's weird.
Quiet M4M says, I love this kid's singular pursuit to make sure his sister doesn't get any ass. It's not like that dude has got game. Look at his tie.
Look at his tie.
Tim says, the teens on the couch must have been real fucking idiots for thinking it really was the parents.
Wouldn't you know what your dad sounds like?
Orange. It's like,
I think I'd be more frightened at what this like fucking monster that entered my fucking mind is saying now.
Oh man. Yeah, it's clearly not the...
I know it's supposed to be like a...
Yeah.
But when you think about
when
it...
When I was little, I believed it. I was like, that's cool!
Yeah, but like you gotta think about the logistics of this, though. It's like... That worked for like Kevin McAllister and all, because no one knows what his dad sounds like. You know what your dad sounds like.
And also in the movie, it sounded more convincing than it... Yeah.
Oh. Well, I mean...
In the commercial and in the real product, it...
The commercial actually shows clips of the movie, doesn't it? Little tiny clips? Yeah, okay.
Okay, so Sonic 008 says,
"Oh God,
hey, your dad sounds like shit, man."
Jeez.
Joe says, "I got one of these for Christmas one year, and the damn thing wouldn't work. My mom felt so bad that we took it back and she bought me a Game Boy. Plus, I think she felt bad that all it was a fucking tape recorder. A shitty one of
them." You know what? I'm going to be honest. I think that may have been why my mom never bought me one.
Because it's a tape recorder.
Yeah.
I think adults, like, probably caught on to that. Like, it's just a tape recorder.
Maybe they were doing us a favor.
Probably. I mean, because I...
Because, look, like, that story, if I got a Game Boy, I think I would have shit my pants. I would have loved the Game Boy at that time. I don't think I would have known that I would have liked a Game Boy over a Talk Boy.
Yeah,
but because
for 3 years in a row I asked for a Talk Boy, I never got it.
Yeah,
yeah,
same.
Yeah, but
so not 3 years.
I did get a Game Boy Pocket Ice Edition, and that was fucking amazing.
Yeah,
and it was like Talk Boy. What the hell is that? It's a Game Boy.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean. Maybe that was the better option in the end.
Maybe we were being looked out for.
Yeah.
That could be it.
Thank you, Mom.
So, Mumbly Joe says, "I wish I still had mine. Only problem was it took 6 AA batteries."
Holy shit.
Okay, that's the one thing that a lot of people forget about toys from the 90s and before, and like the 80s and whatever. Toys used to take so many batteries. Like, remember that? Remember having to like...
I remember it always be like 4 like AAA, and that would always annoy me because no one has.
But AAA. If you had like a big gen electronic thing, you had to load it with shitloads of batteries.
See, and I don't remember that at all because the Game Boy Color was 2 batteries. That was it.
The Game Boy Pocket was, I think, 4 AAAs.
Okay,
yeah,
because that was 2 AAs for
Game Boy Color. I think the original Game Boy was 4 AAs. Yeah,
the original, that big, the gray one.
I had that too. Well, it was my brother's, but
yeah, that makes sense because
I've played every Game Boy up to
like the SP, I think.
Advance, no, just normal.
Okay,
yeah, I had Game Boy Color, I had Game Boy Advance, I had Game Boy Pocket.
Okay,
and then I had original Game Boy.
Yes,
and then after that, and then, recently I just found out that they're not even called Game Boy anymore. So that kind of disappointed me. Okay, so Mad Warden says, "Shit. People be trying to say 2010s are all new and shit. I mean, come on now. Xbox One? We got this bitch-ass Microsoft fanboys be trying to say it's all new and shit. I don't give a fuck. You know what Xbox ought to try to copy? Xbox ought to try to copy how to get games." this is new Talk Boy, but
Talk Boy was the original game console. Apparently, I don't know what
Xbox got to try to copy to get games.
Trying to get game. That's what this guy was trying to do with the tie. Guys,
very excited, Mad Warden. You're excited. So Art Maddox, "I got in so much fucking trouble when I was a kid. I used to love saying dirty ass shit and listening to it slow and fast mode. Well, the tape my friend used was his little sister's dance tape. So there's a third grader popping in a tape to dance to, and then it hears us talking about hookers and penises. She cried and it didn't go over well with the parents."
What?
So he's saying...
Okay.
Her sister...
Was supposed to dance to a song.
They used the sister's dance tape.
Yeah.
Like, I'm guessing it's like a mixtape. And they recorded over it of them as kids, and they're just talking about penises and hookers.
Yeah.
And then I guess at her recital when she popped her hand,
that's great.
That's horrible.
No, that's horrible, but that's amazing that happened.
And then she cried.
Oh.
And a room full of parents probably heard weird things.
Oh, and that little girl probably got in a bit of trouble for
penises and hookers. I watched Milk Money. I know what a hooker is. You remember Milk Money? You ever see that movie?
No.
Oh, man. It's from the 90s. Melanie Griffith and Ed Harris and a bunch of little kids. I think the kid from Blank Check's in it.
I think that kid was in a lot of stuff.
It's the 90s. He was in everything.
Yeah.
All right. So the last one to seal this one up. This is from Fun for All in the Family 10, 1990. That was the year that the arrogant and immature powers that were supposed to have fully prepared and initiated the tyrannical overthrow. All these advanced gadgets and communication things should have never made it to mass consumption. That means mobile phones, pad crap, would have never gone beyond the realms of advanced technology research centers, and old ladies on buses would never have to experience the noise of some immature retard playing this crap. Thatcher should have been sacked for being far too wet and weak, and not replaced with something far wetter, but the total reverse. The Gulf War would have been aborted and condemned. American Psycho and Gordon Gekko would have never been permitted. Michael Jackson would still be around, despite having half a nose and being banned for being suitable for mass consumption. Thus, he would have never appeared in Back to the Future 2 in his ghost robot corpse version. And 9/11 would not have happened. Instead, mass overthrow and reconfiguration would have taken place. Thus, we are now presently 25 to 50 years behind schedule.
What the fuck is happening? What the hell is that? What is that?
I don't know,
that's
awesome.
Frightening, actually.
The Top Boy and all this technology.
They ruined everything.
They've ruined culture, and Thatcher was too wet or something.
But replaced by something even wetter, but going in complete reverse.
Michael Jackson was in Back to the Future 2, but it was his ghost robot corpse.
That's a hell of a thing. I don't know what to say to that.
Well, this guy clearly, the Top Boy is clearly the reason
we are not advanced.
It's why we have iPhones, why we have iPads.
So isn't that a good thing?
I don't know. No, because consumption is bad, apparently. And the Top Boy led to mass consumption.
That's funny.
When you think about it, he makes perfect sense.
When you think about it.
Yeah, he's right.
We invented the Talk Boy and cell phones. We invented the cell phones because we wanted the Talk Boy.
Talk Boy is the reason for 9/11.
Yes. What the hell?
Yeah, that was Pop Culture Gen Care this week.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the Talk Boy was it's a thing that'll live on in us. That sounds weird to say that. Remember, I'm sick. It's a thing that will always be in our memories, just like that one childhood toy we really wanted but never got. And maybe it's good that
yeah, because I don't see myself. I'm gonna be honest. I think I was a really like fair weather fan when it came to a lot of toys that look cool. Once you got them,
yeah,
chances are you didn't play with them that much.
Having the memory of what could have been for the Talk Boy is far better than probably the reality of
yeah.
It's a shitty tape recorder. Yeah, so
I don't know. Maybe it's a good thing we never got it.
No, I think it is. Yeah. I think getting other presents was probably better.
Yeah.
Getting Tarzan toys for some reason.
Hey, action figures are cooler.
They were pretty cool. So, going back to the beginning, let's wrap this up. I wanted to these chicks when they opened up for Ted Nugent at the Bluebird Theater in Denver in 1986.
This is a song, too.
Of course it's a song. It's always okay. A song.
Shit. Damn. This, I don't know. Cyndi Lauper. I don't know.
This is Poison with Talk Dirty to Me.
Oh, God!
You know, I never seen you look so good. You never act the way you should. But I like it, and I know you like it too, the way that I want.